This is Rich's Random Podcast Generator, episode 14, recorded February 26, 2012. Hacking the HP microserver. I just muted John.
Can you, John, say something?
Just tell him to unmute himself.
Yeah.
Tell him I said unmute himself.
Mike, tell him to unmute himself.
John, unmute yourself.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah. Say something, John.
Can you hear me now?
I can. I can hear you. Were you guys just screwing with me?
No. Can't hear him anymore. You know what I did? I muted you and then had you unmute yourself.
Oh, wow.
I have no idea. I was just screwing around. I says, well, whatever.
Jay, do we still have you? Yeah, he's eating. So he's being, being kind enough to not eat.
Yeah, I had a peanut butter sandwich just before I got on with you guys.
Nice.
Of course, I could have had a bigger meal. I mean, it's been a half hour now, so.
Okay,
yeah.
So what we really wanted to accomplish today, and John, the reason we hounded you down, I want to make sure you're on, and Jay, you can jump in here too. So there's been a lot of posts about the HP microserver that you guys have done, and been a lot of conversations around that. So what we thought we'd try and do is open some kind of dialogue around that topic. John Zadler, you were the one that came to me and said we ought to be talking about it. I'd like to structure it a little bit just because it'll get crazy and out of hand if we don't, but I don't necessarily know how to go about that or where to start. I guess I'll take suggestions.
Well, the first thing is I'd like to know, like, John, where did you start posting in our forums? Under what section did you put the microserver?
There is a microserver section. It's the second blue block. It says Home Server and Storage Forum, and the last item down there is the NAS, Cloud, Attached Storage, and then below that is Microserver, Synology, Drobo, Cloud Storage.
Got it. Okay, there we go.
So you click on Microserver, and that's...
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, that's it, because one of the biggest posts we saw going was the one that I think you started, or anyway, you're very well involved in that one that I posted, where you kind of turned to that ESXi, right? Did you want to install that?
Well, I was thinking about it at the time, just because I'd seen a lot of people in England and Australia doing that, and in England, there's a company there that even had... they were selling like the virtual home lab starter kit, and it was a home server with an 8 gig, and it even had a flash drive that you put ESXi on and put that on your motherboard. And I thought that was pretty cool, and I did look at that. But the more I looked at it, the more worried I got that I wouldn't know what the hell I was doing. So I stepped back and thought, well, I'll ease into it with Hyper-V, and then maybe down the road play with ESXi.
Okay, yeah, I think you're talking about that site, Andy's World, right?
Yeah, that is a cool site.
Do we have a link there somewhere?
Yeah, I had a link in there.
Yeah, pop one into the chat, please. Yeah, because I know that guy had set up a cluster for 5 machines. Does anybody else know what I don't really know. I think it's a virtual thing. Does anybody else have any more information on what the ESXi is? Okay.
Yeah, it's just another flavor of Hyper-V. Tinkerer guy is a big ESXi guy.
Okay, yeah, we'll probably try and get him on the...
Yeah, he's a trainer.
Well, I think isn't VMware or whatever, whoever makes that, that is the most popular hypervisor out there, right?
Absolutely. This is Jay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
It'd be the leader, and then either Zen Server or Hyper-V would be second.
You were involved in that post too, right, Jay?
Absolutely.
So what's the story with that? Because that's a reference. Getting back to the Andy's World there, I know the guy had some photo on his site there where he had like these 4 gig sticks and basically or USB memories, and he's putting the OS on there. And since the microserver has that internal, I think they call it a slot type A, so you can actually put the USB stick on the motherboard. You know, it's not like a header. It's a slot, and you just plug it there. You close the box, and it becomes invisible. So basically, the whole story is that the OS fits on. You put the OS on this USB stick. You put it in there, and basically, you boot the server from the USB stick, and you got your OS, right?
Yes, that's what I was doing.
Okay, and what do they mean when they say cluster? You mean that you have a bunch of these servers, and they're all like kind of basically talking to each other to make it more powerful? Is that the idea?
Essentially, yes. You're you're taking two or more of these like hardware servers and you're putting them into a cluster. And so with a vSphere piece of it, you can move live virtual machines from one host to another host and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's it.
And you could set them up, too, so that if one of them is starting to fail, if they're in a cluster, they move themselves over to another machine.
Well, that's two different things. The piece that you're talking about, it's called high availability. And what that does is that if a host fails, then the rest of them will be started over on a different one, if that makes sense. So sure. You've got two hosts, right? And this one has, say, 10 VMs, and then this one fails. Well, in the cluster, high availability, or HA, will bring those up on over here, but they're shut down. So it doesn't work if hardware is failing. It doesn't fail. It's either up or it's not up. That's all.
Right. What I thought was neat about Andy's world, well, you got a picture of it there. He's got like his 5 microserver cluster. I mean, that's total geekdom right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so these microservers, since they're low powered, they're ideal for setting up this type of cluster, right? So basically what happened, your OS is on that USB stick, so you're leaving up, unlike Windows Home Server version 1 or 2 or whatever, where you have to partition your system drive, the whole OS is on the USB stick, so you can use the 4 slots for your data, for your data drives, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Does it support the 3-terabyte drives, or it's only the 2-terabyte drives? Do you know?
It supports 3, because I have a 3 in mine right now.
Okay. So, and do you know how you get that, like, the OS on the USB chip? Do you, like, download the OS, burn it to, or copy it to the, let's say, make your USB stick bootable, put it in there, boot from it, then you're good to go, or?
What I did was that I hooked up an external DVD drive to my little HP, and then I plugged this USB stick into it and then just installed that way, because the installer recognizes the USB stick as a drive.
So it was an easy install, right?
Oh, yeah. It's flawless. It's very simple. You can actually install ESX into VMware Workstation. You can mess around with it that way.
And there's an HP link to, there's like an HP version of ESXi.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And basically, what would you end up using that? That's like once you got that set up and you got all those drives, and let's say you got 5 of these drives, with each one of them has 4 2-terabyte drives on it. Basically, what are you using this cluster for? What are you using this information for? All this data. What programs would you run? Type thing like.
Well, you can run multiple things, right? I mean, I use mine for testing Windows Home Server 2011, and I threw some Windows 7 boxes on there, and I just wanted to test how it out. You know, how it would actually restore from a bare metal type of situation. But, you know, you can throw a SQL on there, you can put Exchange, you can put a file cluster, you can do whatever you want. Because the OS doesn't know anything about the underlying hardware. All it sees is what the VMware hypervisor gives to it. So it's agnostic. As long as it can install, it's fine.
So basically you have that the ESXi, because this is something that I don't know about. This is why I'm asking these questions.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
You have that underlying ESXi OS running there. Then you say, okay, you know what? Now I want to try a virtual machine of Windows Home Server 2011. And you go ahead and you install it. And then if you say you want to install a version of, Server 2008, you would install that on another machine? Do you get like a central console for all these machines? Let's say if you had 2 or 3 connect.
Yes, absolutely. Can I share my screen in
Google?
All right, I don't know how to do that.
So. Oh, share the screen?
Yeah.
Upper left-hand corner on your Google window, it just says share screen. Just click on that.
Oh, right there where it says share screen?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right, very good, sir.
It's too easy.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. All right, so, sorry.
No,
so
you're
what
good.
This is, sometimes, you know, you. All right, here we go. So here is just a simple little Windows 7 box, right? This is not on my micro server. This is on a different little test box that I borrowed from someone else. You know, but here's a Windows 7 box right here. Or here's an XP box.
So, Jay, are you on... So you are using a client on another PC then to... you basically attach it to the server via IP, then this management console is exposed to you. Is that kind of the way it works?
Yes, that's correct. There's the underlying. This is the box that I installed ESX on. This is actually if you look here, this is a Lenovo. It's one of their, I can't really see the model number, but like I said, this was borrowed. So it's got one hard drive in there, but look, it's got 16 gigs of RAM. and that's plenty. A dual core 3 gigahertz processor in there, so that's fine. So, yeah, so look, there's, you know, there's a little XP machine, and the Windows 7 machine's coming up, and, you know, this is all networked, you know.
Now, why would you use that over, like, Hyper-V?
Familiarity.
You're just more comfortable with ESXi than you are VMware.
Yes. Well, yeah, this is just what I use. Right. This is my job at work.
Right. So the install, and I know you went through this, but let me cover again. So you put the software on the stick, boot mm-hmm. to it. Do you run it off that USB, or do you actually install it? So you can just leave it. You don't even need to install that to a drive anywhere.
Nope.
And what size USB drive do you need?
Mine's a 4 gig, and that works like a champ.
Does that need to be a special? Anything special with that drive? Anything will work?
No.
Hey, Jay.
Yes, sir.
What happens when you power down? Can you just go back and power up and it boots up again? And it's all your VMs that you've created have been saved to hard drives and you can open them back up again?
Sure. You either have to shut it off or you can suspend it. There's a little kind of a pause button right here. But yeah, that's all, you know.
Because I know in the forums recently we saw a poster from G-Way Tech, right? And he was talking about developing add-ins for 2011 home server. And that's it. One of the things he says is, use like a set of VMs. Because then, let's say you write an add-in, it kind of messes up your system and stuff like that. You don't want to put it on a server that has, just running just Windows Home Server 2011. And then you mess it up. Well, now what? So it's like he's saying, set up like a VM. So I guess if you would go this route, where you would say, okay, set up this ESXi, put a VM of Windows Home Server 2011, and test away. And then if it dies, then you can just bring back a clean install, right?
Right. So there's my what it's displaying right now. It's the multiple windows that I have open. So if I did this one, then what you guys see is my XP machine. I mean, big deal. Okay. Well, so if I wanted to shut down the host as soon as possible, I would just hit this into a suspend mode, and then I could shut down my ESX host. I could do that if I wanted.
So, Jay, say I've got this running, and I've got 3 or 4. Say I'm using it for my 2011 box, and I experience a power failure here, and that PC reboots. Is there some kind of graceful recovery that takes place then? Will it restart 2011 for me if I'm running that virtually? In virtualization, I guess is what I should
say. Well, from a free version, no, but using the clustering vSphere piece, once your host came back on and the virtual center piece that attaches to SQL, once that came back up, then it would say, hey, these VMs need to come back on, and so they'll start being turned on.
Okay.
But if you have a power outage where your host goes down, it's done. You're down. No questions asked.
Okay, so that's for the free version. So say I'm on the free version, and I got 2011, and maybe I'm virtualizing a couple other PCs on the network. And it shuts off, and the PC comes back on, even if it reboots to the flash drive that I've got the ESXi on. When I get home, I just need to restart those instances then? And everything fires back up?
That's absolutely correct.
And is it passed through? So like currently, I've got a 2011 box native on the microserver, and I've got a USB 3 card in it that has a Drobo S attached for the storage, for attached storage to it. Works really well. Through this, would I be able to just expose that Drobo as the main storage for the entire server?
You could do that. You can also expose the Drobo to a specific VM if you wanted to.
Pass through.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I heard some VMs have different problems, right? Some won't pass through like certain USB devices and stuff like that. So,
yeah, storage is generally pretty okay. At work, some of our clients use like it's a USB signature pad.
Sure.
So that works fantastic on a Windows 7 device or a Windows 7 VM, but does not work with XP. So they've been kind of messing with that.
Not the right drivers.
Yeah, probably so.
What about cameras and microphones? Because one of the things I've been trying to do is take the broadcast server that I have here and virtualize it and pass, and then run a Windows 7 instance on it at the same time that drives the camera and microphone for the podcast. That way I'd have the whole thing kind of consolidated on one piece of physical hardware, but I wouldn't have to have two separate physical machines to make that work. So That might be worth a try.
What's your processor in that machine you're thinking about virtualizing?
Core i3.
I don't know if that's enough to do your broadcasting.
Yeah, it might not.
The microserver, even though it's got that, whatever, N40L, you got the N40L model or the N36? The 40? And that's peppy enough to get all that stuff working.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely have some disk I/O contention, you know, if you throw too much on there. It's not designed for that, right? But yeah, I might have any trouble
with it. Is that two 4-gig sticks or what?
Yes.
Okay. How many VMs did you have running on there, Jay?
I had, I don't know, four, five. Yeah, four or five.
And what were their, what were the hosts? Or the guests, sorry.
Well, you had 2011.
Yeah, yeah, and that had four, a 2-gig there, and then I had, thank you, dear. My wife just brought me popcorn.
Nice.
Wow.
Wow, you do everything in large containers.
Yeah, well, I'm not done with my salad yet either, by the way. Anyway, and I had the two Windows 7 machine, and both of those had a gig apiece. And then these two XP boxes, what did I give them? I don't know. It's like 512 or 256, they're bare minimum, just to, you know, kind of hang out there a little bit. But yeah, but you know, I don't know, that was kind of fun.
Those Windows 7 guests, did you find those to be a little sluggish with just 1 gig of memory?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but you know, that's inherent of Windows 7.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm finding I got to take all the boxes past, at least past 2. I used to think 2 gig was enough for Windows 7, but it really runs best on 4.
Yeah.
Now, when you set up 2011 on there under ESXi, did you give it one CPU core or did you give it both cores?
I gave it both.
And then can you limit how much of the total CPU, machine CPU that it'll use?
You're talking about shares and stuff. You can, but not with the standalone version of an ESX, if that makes sense. Yeah.
The free version.
Yes. Yeah, you would need the actual client.
What about the hard drives there? Do you actually point it to, let's say, physical hard drives, or that's a virtual pool that you say, okay, this is, I've made a RAID array or something, and this is 10, whatever, 4 terabytes, and that's reserved for Windows Home Server 2011, or do you actually point
it to physical? Well, I was just testing, so I didn't point it to the actual raw disk. The actual physical disk. I actually made just a bunch of little VMDK files, you know, just virtual drives.
Okay.
That's all. I wanted to test the whole moving a folder between the two and just, you know, because I had never seen that before.
Gotcha. So.
But you can't you, assign different drives to different machines?
I don't know about the free version. Oh, sure. You can put like a VM on its own drive if you want to, you know. Yeah, that's
fine. Oh, okay. That's kind of the point where I'm at now with the Hyper-V was to, I wanted to figure out how to pass through a hard drive to a machine. So like, well, I just put 2011 in Hyper-V and I was trying to figure out how to pass through a drive to it. So that, and
John, you're talking about passing through a physical, you wanted to pass the entire physical drive through to the OS.
Yeah, I read about these guys that are passing them through where the guest has that entire drive. Nothing else can get to it.
And the benefit to that is?
Well, what I'm trying to achieve is just to see if I can do it. But also, I mean, down the road, like in the future when I go to 2011, say I want to put it on a machine, but I want to put it under Hyper-V, put it in there, and then have maybe, or Hyper-V or ESXi, and then have other machines on that same physical machine doing other things, and they could have their own drives and they're separate from each other.
Okay. And the advantage to that is, in your mind, is just that it's only writing physically to that drive and not trying to span the data across multiple drives?
Well, and none of the other machines would see that drive. It owns that drive.
Exclusiveness to the drive.
Right, and it can do its own thing to that drive.
Okay, Jay, have you worked with VMware?
Let the poor guy eat his bun.
Sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Just eat on the camera, man. It's all good.
No, I can't. I physically can't do that. Anyway, what's your question?
Have you worked with VMware and ESXi? And well, let me ask that question. Have you worked with both of those?
Well, VMware is the company.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the the clustering piece is called vSphere, right? That's kind of like the umbrella type thing. I should, gosh, we could spend the rest of the day talking about that mess. But I've been doing that for about 4 years, I guess. 3-4 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, so I just got them mixed up. I guess the question I wanted to ask was VMware versus Hyper-V. Have you done?
Oh, yeah. I've done nothing with Hyper-V actually. Microsoft had this. What was it called? It was called Home, not Home Server. It was. I've already forgot. I can't remember what it's called. A virtual server. That's what they came out with. I think that's what it was called.
Virtual yes. Server 2005 R2.
That's it. Right, right. So that was our that was the beginning of what has turned into a career. My director said, "Hey, this is cool stuff. Find out what it does." So we built this huge box with 4 CPUs, dual core, I don't know, 24 gig of RAM or whatever. A big old HP box with a big old a shelf underneath. And we had a bunch of dev and QA VMs, and our application guys and our web guys were using it. And then one day, the host needed to be patched because it's a Microsoft box, so it's going to get Microsoft patching. And he said, "Oh yeah, go ahead. They're not using it." Well, no one thought that by rebooting the host, it drops all the VMs. And so that was a bad day because everyone started yelling at me.
Everyone started yelling.
Yes.
The box, go ahead.
Yes, yes, that's what I said. I said, but he said do it anyway. Yes. So that was the day we pulled the plug on that project and started this new. It's called VMware or something. Not really sure what that was. So you know,
how long ago was that?
4 years.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so under the VMware umbrella is this ESXi. That is, yes. They have a standalone and then an enterprise. And do I need the enterprise to cluster, or can I use this free version to cluster as well?
Okay, so the free version is not the same as the trial version. There's one that you can download. It's the 60-day trial, and with that, you get all the bells and whistles. So I think that's about a 4-gig download.
But I'm thinking from an average guy, you know, all of us here.
Sure.
If we're going to download, you know, I'm assuming the enterprise version for guys like us is probably a little too pricey to, you know.
The vCenter alone, I think, is $5,000.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So
that they don't have something like TechNet or.
You know, they use. No. That's funny. They used to, and they got rid of it. And so there's this big, huge uproar about bringing it back. I mean, honestly, 60 days that's not a lot of time for people to be testing things. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, so basically, let's exclude the trial version because.
Okay.
We're going to just, no one's going to be able to use that. I'm talking long term. The product that's available for free for me to use is a standalone one box only license.
Yes.
Okay. And I can't cluster those together.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. So what this guy's doing at Andy's World, basically you have to pay for some software there, right?
Yes. I'd actually want to look at what he's doing. But,
the other question I had was, remember, like, well, in Windows Home Server 2011 and even version 1, one of the things that, you know, people were, you know, were hoping for was to get the media center in there and, you know, connect it to their TV and all of that. So since that didn't happen, that said, what I'm wondering is now, okay, let's say you have a micro server, you set up your ESXi, then you throw in Windows Home Server 2011, and then you put an image of, a build of Windows Home Server, Windows 7, let's say. And now you can connect your 360s. You know, will that pass through, you know, that now you can connect your 360s to your Windows 7 box and grab all your content from the server? Would that work? That you in the background you have your Windows 7 running so that you can use the media center part of the Windows 7 that's connected to your Xboxes in your house. And now that's a way now to interface media center into Windows Home Server.
I didn't try the media center. I just went straight for one of my 360s right to the virtualized home server, and I didn't have any trouble.
Well, but you're using your 360. You're using like the built-in dashboard, right? You're not using the media center interface, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, because it becomes just like a regular simple device there. It's, you go and you find this tree structure or whatever.
Right.
But that's what, if you want to use the Media Center interface, well, you have to, you know, you have to sync it with a Windows 7 home, Windows 7 Premium or higher that has the built-in functionality for Media Center. So then at least you can pass that, because that's, like I said, it's not built into Windows Home Server. Some of the guys, they try to set up small, you know, Windows 7 thin client, because that's it. I guess a thin client is less resource intensive. But so I'm just wondering, anyway, I guess Windows 7, you can still run a Windows 7 VM.
Yeah, I might just build one real quick and find out.
Yeah, well, there you got all the components, right? You have your 360, so that's it. You know, let us know, try it out, and you know, get Media Center running in your Windows 7 build, and then connect up your Xbox, and then see if that can kind of run, you know, minimally in the background. So then now you can point to all your Windows Home Server stuff.
Okay, I can do that.
So, Jay, what kind of physical hardware do you have there at home? What are you running
these on? You don't want to know. It's all junk.
Okay. It's all my stuff's junk, too.
Well, I mean, I used to be really into building my own stuff, and then I got tired of it because I'd buy, you know, $1,200 worth of equipment, and then the next day it's worth three.
Right.
Yeah, so I started buying the HP pre-built stuff right from Costco.
So what do you have it on? I assume you're running it at home, right? I mean, you've got the stuff running at home?
Yes.
So
what am I running at home? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, what kind of physical box do you have it on?
Well, what I'm on right now, I guess that's my main PC. This is an HP P6280T or something like that. That's a quad-core 2.6 with 8 gig of RAM, and, of course, it's 64-bit. I went with 8 gig because I do a lot of VMware workstation stuff on here. So, you know, I really enjoy that. And then, well, you know about the HP NL40, of course. My EX485 is sitting behind me, right next to the IOSafe, of course.
Nice. You know. So how do you have your microserver configured then at this point?
Oh, I just installed Windows 7 on it last night using that drive testing.
ATTO?
Yeah. So I wanted to test all these old drives that I had sitting around and see how fast they were. Man, they're dogs. They're horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
It's kind of sad, isn't it? All right, so on your microserver right now,
yes.
Physically, all you have is Windows 7 on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you put 2011 on there.
Well, that was yesterday. I started to put 2011 on it Friday evening, and then someone had posted, hey, let's talk about this on Sunday. I thought, well, all right, I don't want to start building it now. I'll just, you know, mess around with it later or whatever, because eventually this will become a 2011 box to replace my EX485.
And you're going to run that natively on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to mess around with any kind of ESX because, you know, this will be built and then just left alone.
Yeah, see, that's what I was saying, like, on the podcast, is what I like about these boxes, because it's so easy to swap out the drives and actually to boot. And when you boot, you can say boot off, you know, drive one, drive two, drive three. You know, how the Media Smart Server, it's like, yeah, you know, that your system drive has to be in the bottom tray, and that's the one it goes to.
Right.
So what's neat is, you know, you can have, you know, different OSs on different drives and boot into that, and away you go. So, when I was playing around, that's it, instead of really using a VMs, I said, you know, I'll throw in a drive. And that'll be my, let's say I'll throw in two drives, and that'll be my Windows Home Server. Then if I want to test Windows 7, I'll pull those two drives out, put another hard drive in there, and I got my Windows 7 OS. But that's it. Obviously, you're only running one at a time, you know? Whereas in VM, at least you can, you know, do it multiple. But then, you know, I'm thinking, you know, the machine wouldn't be powerful enough to do all of that stuff. But apparently, you can get it done.
Jay, with that, do you think it's not powerful enough to? I mean, so if I had one of these boxes and I had 4 gig of RAM in it, and I used two for 2011 and two for a Windows 7 instance running at the same time, your experience or what's your thought on one of these microservers?
Well, it also depends on what you're going to be using it for. If it's just web surfing and, you know, just kind of hanging out and testing Office and that kind of stuff, it'll probably be fine. But I'd be concerned if you're going to do, like, some video rendering or splicing of audio files. I don't know. I As I was installing Windows 7, I was pretty amazed at how slow it actually acts sometimes. So I don't know if that's a Windows 7 thing or... I also installed Friday afternoon, I installed OpenFiler, you know, which is a nice cozy piece. And that was just, I mean, it was really slow to install. I thought, man, this is not good. So,
yeah. But how did the performance? You got it up and running?
Oh, it's fine. Faster drives, I'm sure, would have been better.
Well, it's just slow writing all the the installation files to the disk because the processor figures pretty strongly in that. So.
Yeah. This is why I would look at trying to install Windows 7, like I said before, thin client, and see if that's less resource intensive. Because let me tell you, again, I was just rebuilding my version 1 on the other because I have two microservers. So on one of them, I put my version 1 Windows Home Server. And so you have your system drive, and then I put in the second drive, and I said, okay, enable duplication on one of my videos folders. And that drive, that videos folder is more than 1 terabyte. Let me tell you, so now it's writing to the system drive, right? It's duplicating to the system drive all these files. The thing was dead slow. It was holy mackerel. Come on, click, click. So if there's a lot of file being transferred around like that, this thing can't handle it. Like I said, when I had my Media Smart with the E5400 chip, like that guy was, it was purring along, was doing his thing. Now this guy is like, no, forget it. So I had to either, what did I do? I actually put in a third drive, and then now what happens when you put in a third drive into Windows Home Server version 1, instead of duplicating to your system drive, it says, oh, okay, I see another drive, I'll start duplicating to that drive. So then it leaves your system drive alone. So now at least now, it's not,
This device, this hardware, is not really made to be a workstation, multitasking workstation. It's really just for file serving. And please don't ask me to serve a whole heck of a lot of different clients at one time server.
Well, it's really a small business entry level server. And
serving up doc files or something, not streaming videos to all your workers who should be working on stuff instead of looking at videos. Yeah. It's just very I'm not slamming it. I'm just saying it's just remember what it is. You're not gonna get Core i7 performance out of something that's basically souped up Atom processor.
Jay, we'll let you eat. John, can you talk a little bit about I keep peppering Jay with questions.
Jay is starving.
John, can you talk a little bit about the way you've got your now? I mean, you do a lot with your with that little server. Can you talk? How do you have it configured now? What do you have on it? What have you done to it?
Yeah, like I said before, I had looked at ESXi because I'd seen so many people on the blogs in Europe and Australia putting that, using the microservers and setting up, for something to play with at home. But I decided I didn't know that much about ESXi, and I was, so to be a little bit more conservative, and I thought, well, hell, I got this TechNet account, and I got all this software there. Why not put 2008 R2, see if that thing loads on and how fast it operates, and initiate the Hyper-V role and see what I can load on there. So that's what I'm doing. I put 2008 R2 Enterprise on, and I was really impressed by how well it ran. Though I think a big help with that is having the SSD drive in. And you saw my post where I put an SSD drive in between the optical drive bay and the main 4 drive bay.
And that's at the Home Server Show forums, right?
Yeah. In fact, I put some pictures up and everything.
How big is that? Just so folks who haven't read that post yet, how big is that SSD drive?
128.
Okay.
It's a Crucial M4. Okay. And, 128 gig.
That's a huge thing, though. I mean, adding an SSD to a small little processor like that, a system with a low-powered processor, it's huge to put an SSD in there. So,
there's a guy in Australia that is putting in 6 SSDs into his machine.
Holy moly!
I don't know. That seems a little crazy to me, but.
So how did you fit that in there? Because obviously you have to take the top of the case off, and you slid it in through the back, or did you have to take out the jammer?
I slid it in through the back. Yeah, I was going to use. I was thinking of using the Dremel to make a hole for the eSATA to SATA cable for the green drive that I put into the optical display. Yeah, you got the picture right there with the blue tape.
Nice. You got it taped down?
Yeah, it's taped down.
Nice. Well, and that's right behind that white. The white piece there is the HP logo.
Yeah.
Right in the very front of the box, just so for orientation for some folks.
Yeah, and so you had to kind of slide it in from the back and angle it in. And
so that's it. Since it's a small 2.5-inch form factor, you wouldn't be able to do that with a 3.5-inch drive, but that drive you can fit it in there, right?
Well, I didn't try it with a 3.5. If you wanted to get creative with a Dremel, you could probably get one in there.
Yeah, because that's according to... See that image there where you have that wire there? Like, that's apparently that panel there, that bar that's going vertical. You would have to, like, cut that because it's not wide enough there to fit
right.
3.5-inch drive. And then it's like, how would you get that in there? You probably have to cut out the light there for the logo and then, you know, try to fit it in that way because you wouldn't be able to get it in the other way. But the 2.5-inch drive, you were able to get it in there.
Yeah, I love it. Slide it in from the back and then... The 3.5-inch drive that I put in, I just got one of those converter kits. There's some additional pictures further down that show.
Yeah, I think you got these guys, eh? You got these little.
Yeah, you got it. In fact, I have it right here, but I have it updating.
Show those again, John. Yeah, just little rails, right?
Yeah.
And John, those rails. Where'd you get those rails?
Down the street there. That's it. See that you put these little four little screws in here, and that's it. Then you attach it to the drive,
right?
That one on each side. And then what's cool is that that's it. Now you can lock it into where you have the if you're not using the 5.25-inch bay there, for the CD drive, then it'll lock in, and then that's it. Out the back, you'll have you can add your harness there, your cable for the SATA and the data and power, and you just lock it in there, and it's nice and safe.
Okay. John, you said there were some more pictures. This is the last picture in that post. Is it in another post?
Which post are you looking at?
I am in the server 2008 R2 Enterprise loaded on microserver.
Yeah, look in the drive performance on N40L microserver. The very last post in that. It also shows some pictures of those dry bays, and you can see the blue SATA cable that I ran through that kind of raceway to the side of the power supply.
How I pass my power cables. Yeah, through just above the power supply, just fished in there. They were just long enough that I was able to make the connections there.
So you go to my post from the 24th. And it's in that section on drive performance.
Oh, I got it here. Okay, let me share screen here.
And you get down to the 24th, and I show, I show first that the green drive, there's no difference in the performance whether it's plugged into port 5, which is the eSATA port, or port 3, which is down on the in the main drive bay.
That's those first two performance indicators there, or performance?
That's the first one on the EADS. And then the picture right below it shows the 2-terabyte green drive in the optical drive bay. Yeah, that picture right there, if you could back up, you see the blue cable?
Mm-hmm.
That's the SATA cable that plugs into the motherboard and then plugs in. So that's port 4, and that plugs into the SSD drive. So that's my OS cable. Yeah. So keep on going down now. And you see the performance drives that I did. Okay, now starting there, that picture there, that shows the green drive in that port. And you can see the mounting rails that John was showing.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to the next picture. And that's a front view. And you can see it mounted in there. And then below that, it's the SSD. And then
I wonder if you'd be able to find brackets that could actually mount, let's say, two hard drives, two 3.5-inch hard drives, one on top of each other. I wonder if it would fit in the case.
I've read of guys that have done that.
Yeah.
I don't know where they got the brackets. Now, this next ATTO, that's the performance of the Seagate 3-terabyte drive that I got. I got it last Tuesday or Wednesday when they had that on sale, and it got here on Friday. So I plugged that thing in, I formatted it 3 terabytes, and I did that, and look at that performance on that thing. That blew me away, to read and write, and that's running off the eSATA port, or port 5.
With respect to 3, like you had noted that it's a 3 gigabit speed, since it's a SATA 2.
Yeah.
Even though the drive is SATA 3, it's...
Yeah, it's in a SATA 2 port, but it's, it's running like a bat out of hell. It's performing better than the 2 terabyte black drive that I have in there for my VHDs and all that stuff.
You don't think it has anything to do with the cache? Because those drives have bigger caches, right?
Well, my Western Digital black drive is supposed to have a 64 meg cache also. But, you know, maybe it's the difference between Western Digital and Seagate. I don't know.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to mention on this podcast, you modified the BIOS, right?
Yeah, I had seen a lot of people had done it, and there was like this Russian one, but the you guys had talked about the and Christian had come on and talked about the BIOS mods that they did, and then I asked if you could post an idiot's guide, and so John did, and this idiot was able to follow along on it and got it on there, and it went real smooth. I mean, in fact, it went so smooth I wasn't sure if it had actually worked, but it did.
Yeah, it goes pretty quick. Eh? You see a bunch of stuff on the screen, and then all of a sudden it's done, and it's like, okay, what's going on? And that's it. Like you said, good thing you posted a lot of good posts there, pictures there. We really appreciate that. Because that's it. You have to go into chipset, and then that's where you start to see a little bit of the magic there, where they start talking about the South Bridge, and you have to start making your changes in there, right?
Yeah, and there's some changes you have to make that aren't real intuitive. So it was, I saw in several places a listing of the changes you had to make. So I copied those and posted those in there too, and then showed some screenshots of what it's supposed to look like, so that anybody that does their BIOS mods, they can just, you know, they do the BIOS mod and then they can just go to those screenshots and match up with them.
And that's just pulled down from bios-mods.com, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to set up an account to log in so that you can download the file. But yeah, we got a link in the post there and stuff.
Okay.
But and one of the things is, because that's it, obviously, when you buy the micro server and you look at the drives, let me see if I have one that's nothing on it, it tells you like they're non-hot swappable, right? And,
right.
Because I think it's set to IDE. But when you set them to AHCI, and then you can make them hot swappable, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
That's only available if you modify the BIOS, though?
I think so.
There's a lot more options. I'm just looking through here, and just some of the screenshots that you have, that BIOS mod opens up quite a few more options, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's really nice. Christian did a good job.
Did he actually do the coding on this, or did he fork it over to somebody else?
I just assumed he did. Yeah. I mean, he was the one that talked about it on your podcast. Yeah.
Right.
Or on the pre-show podcast.
He's on his way back from New York right now, so otherwise we'd probably have him on the show.
Yeah, so that's it. There's one option is you can change the speed. I think it says auto. I set it from for the hard drive. You can set it to 1.5 or 3 gigabits per second. So that's it. It only supports the SATA 2 and not SATA 3. So I made a change there. And I had made also a change there. Like when I tried connecting the Drobo to my 2011 box, I tried using the external eSATA, and it didn't see it. So when I went in that BIOS there was a change that they talk about using the eSATA port, and there was a thing about FIS. There's a terminology, I forget what it means there, but it's file, FIS, and that's something that had to be enabled for it. And then it did recognize the Drobo through the eSATA on the Windows Home Server build. But mind you, even though I put the same BIOS mod on the second microserver, and I installed Windows Home Server version 1, and that guy, through the eSATA, the Drobo, it doesn't see it. So it's a combination of that BIOS plus using a Windows Home Server 2011. I guess there's some kind of built-in drivers that made all of that functionality work. And John, did you see, what was the part there about the enabling the drive 5 and 6? Was that was something that was not available in the original BIOS, and it was in the second? Do you know anything about that? Because remember, they had those two ports there, right? The 5 and the 6, and I think they were set that you couldn't read them, or I think there was something unusual about them.
Well, they were slower. they ran slower because port 4 is designed to actually plug into the optical disk drive. So HP had just deliberately downgraded the port, and they'd also upgraded the eSATA port. And with that BIOS mod, by going in and making those changes, brought all those ports up to the same speed and made them all AHCI too.
Gotcha. And the other trick, I noticed that you're way ahead of the rest of us. You're like the pioneer out there. You modified to use the external, the eSATA port, to bring that cable back into the case to connect to another hard drive?
Yeah, I didn't do a real elegant solution as far as running the cable. It's in that series of pictures after the where you saw the where I had the hard drive up in the bay, and I think Willis that's in Huntsville. He asked how did I plug that thing in? So I put in two or three pictures that showed where I plugged it in the back, and then what I had was I had an old small form slot. Yeah, it shows it right there, that had a hole in it for a network card, a small form factor. Well, that one piece went to an old PCI card that I thought I was going to be able to use in this, but this is a PCI Express, so I still used the slot cover, and it had a hole in it anyway. Mm-hmm. And you can see right there where I ran the cable in, and you just ran it up that kind of wire way that's along the side of the box, and it'll take it all the way up to the optical disk drive bay. And I think that's probably the last picture. But you can see it going in there.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, with that cable, you need not just a SATA to SATA, you need an eSATA to SATA cable, right?
Right, yeah. And you want to get a good quality one, because I had read where a lot of people were having problems with it. But if you go back to that post and just back up to where it showed a picture of the 2 gigabyte green drive in the optical drive bay, and you can see where that red cable comes out of that raceway that kind of runs along the side.
I have the right picture up there?
Yeah, that's it right there.
Okay.
You can see the red cable that's plugged into the 2 terabyte drive. But there's kind of a raceway in that back corner.
You make a good point, John. There is the SATA cable, or eSATA cable. You're right. Some people said that if they use the crappy quality, you know, and you're banging on the box trying to figure out, you know, what did you do wrong, this and that, and it's because they used a poor quality cable and it didn't see the drive when they went to a better cable. So that's something, you know, don't go to get them at the dollar store.
Yeah, I spent $7 on the cable, so, you know, I went all out.
Spender.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there's no locking mechanism, right, for the for eSATA. You just it's made that you just plug it in like that, and hopefully it's tight enough that it won't pop out.
Yeah, it's not a real elegant solution, but for messing around and everything, it's great for that.
It looks pretty good, John. You can't see it. It's kind of behind the PC. No one would ever notice.
Nice job.
Just like the fact that we can bring these pictures in on the podcast. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. It makes it easy to explain things.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking of playing around with is I'll ask Mike Fauchet in the forums there what's a good Rocket Raid card there, because with my version 1 on the microserver, I did add a couple of 3 terabyte drives, you know, to the version 1.
Wow.
I modified that. But what I had to do is... how did I connect that? Yeah, Western Digital, when they sell you the drive, like, or older drives, when they were first selling the, because remember, they didn't have EUFI and all of this stuff. So they were actually giving you a little card. Yeah, this one here. So what happens is, if I just used it, you know, the 3 terabyte drive in version 1, it would see the drive, but would not format it, because you have to format the 3 terabyte drive GPT. And it would make the format, you know, 2 terabytes, and then it would have 746 gig. So only when I used the little card that they include here, which has 2 SATA ports, then I found the drivers for it. Now when I said format the drive, it came up as 2.7 terabytes, and it worked that way. So what I was thinking is, but that's it. Now the drive, I can't put it in the regular slots that are in the microserver, because those guys connect to the motherboard. I need to connect to here. So I actually put the 3 terabyte drive where you have it. The CD drive bay is over there. So I says, you know, how can I, you know, what other options do I have? So what I was thinking is, like I said before, is if I get a RAID card that has a SAS connection, which is the same that's on the motherboard of the microserver, Then I can unplug that cable, plug it into that the Rocket RAID card, put that in the PCI slot, and now I can use those four bays, or let's say three of them. You know, one would be the system drive, unless I did your trick and put an SSD drive and went that route. Then I can use, let's say, the four bays that's plugged to this card, so now it would see it, because unless I don't know if there would be a BIOS change or a driver that would allow me to use those three. You know, like, why is it the Rocket RAID would let me do it, or in this case, this card let me use that 3 terabyte drive, whereas the built-in HP didn't.
Yeah, so you might want to check the forums, the users group. I think the Australian one, they seem to get a little bit more technical sometimes, because I was reading about some guys that had put, I thought they put 2720s in there.
Okay, I'll make a note of that.
I'm pretty sure, because a 2720 isn't that big. The form factor would fit in there, I think. But you can check in those forums and see who did it. But there were some guys. Well, and there was one guy that put in that device that would put in so that you could install 6 2.5-inch drives in the place of the Andy's World. It was one of the guys that had that.
I had brought that up earlier. Let me see if I can find that.
See, I have one of the 4-bay guys.
Yeah.
And that's it. And in the back there, you have, two Molex powers and then four SATA. So that's it. They have some of those, like you said, the Rocket RAID cards, they have some with four drives, but they're four SATA connections. So then you can say, you can use those guys, plug it in here. But that's the card I'm looking for. Since I would like to use the four drives, you know, 3.5-inch drives, and I want to use them in the case, then I want one with the SAS connection there. I think the code is SFF. 8087, something like that.
Isn't it a SATA connection on the back of the back of the drive bays?
Yeah, on the back of the drive bays, it's a SATA connection. Yeah.
So if you put in a Rocket RAID, if you could put in a 2720, you could plug up to 8 drives into that thing. You could run one to the 4 drive bay, the 3.5-inch drive bay that's the main drive bay. Put in that device that you got for the 4 2.5-inch in the optical drive bay, so you could run another 4 to that, and then you could still run a SATA cable from the motherboard up to a SSD. So you'd have 9 drives in there.
See, one of the computer store down the street, he has one of those SAS cables, so it's a one connector to 4 SATA. So what happens is that guy, I could end up using that guy on the motherboard, plug it to this box that you see, because then you could just snap it on the back and that's it. Because the existing cable that's there, it's actually hardwired to the cage. You know, you can't like unplug them from the cage and then plug them to something else. They're hardwired there. So it's like I have to unplug it from the motherboard, plug it into the Rocket RAID, but then that's it. Get another harness that is the SAS to 4 SSD, and that's a plug it to this guy, and I would get another 4 base. But, you know, if I'm using 4 or, let's say, 4 3-terabyte drive, that's a lot of storage. That's a lot of
storage. Hey, get you through the end of the year.
Do you see this guy? So I'm on Andy's World, and he's tweaking. It says the post was tweaking HP, microserver BIOS, blah, 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 blah. And then I scroll down to look at the BIOS, and it's on an old-school monitor. Look at this. Oh, hold on. Let me share my screen here so you guys can see this.
Oh, yeah, the black and white monitor. Yeah, there you go.
Look at that. That's cool. That's nice. That's a good look on for the monitor.
Yeah, and then you got the reflection of the camera or the guy with the camera.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you can see the camera in the background there. That's very cool. This one was taken a little later at night, I think, on that one. So this isn't Christian's BIOS mod. This must be his own.
I'm not sure what that guy did.
Yeah, that's it. Christian's guys, they opened up a little bit more stuff. I think those guys allowed you that access to the port 4 and 5, but Christian pretty much unlocked a bunch of stuff, stuff that I don't even know what it does. So it's
right.
Let's turn that off.
I think they just opened it wide open.
I mean, yeah, I think they did.
Everything.
Yeah, because it shows in the BIOS where you can, in the BIOS it says you can select port multiplying for that eSATA port, but I guess HP and their hardware or something have made it so that you could only do one device, because I know Diehard, you tested it, and you couldn't get the port multiplying to work.
That's right. Just like the 4547 Media Smart servers there, even though they have the eSATA port, it'll only see one drive. So unless you put something like a Drobo that internally, it's a Drobo that's taking care of all those drives, it will only see one drive. So, yeah, that's the same thing here. I would have to put, if I wanted to use, like I have a Sans Digital box with four bays, I would have to buy, you know, maybe a $20 card and put that in the PCI Express slot and then connect it that way. Then use it that way. Only aware for one. So this is why it's good to do the trick the way you did it. Say, you know what, if I can power a SSD drive off of that guy, I'll do that.
John, you and I have the same Drobo, and I'll just show a picture here of I've got the Drobo connected to the server. Oh, you get a really good shot of the skis this way. I went USB 3 on that, John. Any reason you wanted to go eSATA as opposed to USB 3 from the connective? I mean, the connectivity was, I bought a little USB 3 card and put it in there. You can see right here, it gave me two additional ports for the USB 3. Any reason, John, that you did one over the other?
The thing is, first of all, I wanted to test the eSATA, see if that worked.
Yeah.
And that with that Drobo S, I think it's USB 2 and then the eSATA. So, added the fastest three. Speed.
It's 3. At least the version I have is 3, yeah.
I think the version I have is 2.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So,
it's 4 bay or 5 bay?
5 bay.
Oh, yeah. No, this one's got 3. Maybe I got a newer one than you.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons I kind of set this whole thing up was to mm-hmm. get this. I really wanted to pair this, a small form factor server with the Drobo S. And here you can see the USB 3 connector right there, and then it plugs in one. It gave me an additional USB 3 on the server as well. I had a little trouble getting, it's a Buffalo card, and I had a little trouble getting it installed, but once I get the right drivers from Buffalo Direct and fired that thing up, and then I just saved them on the internal USB that's in there so that I wouldn't have to go hunt them back down again and could use them again.
Yeah,
but nice little clean setup, but it gives you kind of an idea of what it looks like in the background here with, I still have a slot. John, do you have a card? No, that card that you put in, that was that a dummy faceplate or was that an actual?
That was a faceplate from an old PCI card.
Okay. So you don't have a card. You don't have any external cards installed.
Yeah, I have a card in the next slot.
In the next. So did you find that difficult to get in and seated correctly when you were trying to reseat the motherboard back on the tray?
It wasn't too bad. The difficulty I had really was when I was running the SATA cable up the case, I had to bend the cable over and it was pushing on the card a little bit. So
yeah.
I had to kind of reach in there with a screwdriver and bend the cable a little bit more so that it wouldn't be pushing on the card. But if you have access to one of those pictures that was showing the back of my device, I think it was at near the end, you can see the card that I put a network card in there so that I'd have an extra NIC for the Hyper-V.
Yeah.
Go so further down.
Okay. This is your dual. You put a dual network card in? Dual
yeah. Card. Yeah. I wanted to get something that I could use later. And so I don't intend to leave that card in there. And I wanted to get something that everybody was saying worked easy with Hyper-V and ESXi, and that was the one that was getting lots of great reviews, so I went with that.
How much was it?
It was like $130.
Wow.
That's a long card or a short card?
It's a little bitty card.
Oh, yeah? So, and that's
it's an Intel card.
Okay. Because there's a, what is it? There's an 8X or a 16X and then a 1X card, right? What are those two slots? Do you recall?
It's in the video card slot.
Okay.
It's in the one that has the little note that says 25 watts max.
Yeah, that's another thing is when you do put an external card or an internal card like that and then you screw it down, then you decide you're going to take your server apart for whatever reason.
You
unbolt the front, you take. So you're trying to pull on that thing, but you forget that in the back there's a screw that's holding that card down. So you have to open the little door and then take that screw out and then be able to pull that through.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear, actually, is forgetting that thing is screwed in.
I actually took a ruler Because it kept unseating for me when I was putting that USB card in there.
Was your SAS cable pushing against it?
It might have been. I can't remember. It just kept unseating. So I gently put it back in, and then I slid a ruler in over the top of the, there's that opening. Let's go back to this picture here. I got to get on the right screen. There we go. Let's see right there. You see that opening right there in the top. And so I slid a ruler in, so it came out on both sides, and then I gently just gave it, kind of this downward push just to make sure it got seated, and then I screwed it in.
Yeah, I kind of reached into that opening with my finger and just kind of pushed the whole card down just to make sure it was seated before I screwed it in. And then it was that opening that I kind of reached in with my finger and a screwdriver to kind of bend the cable so that it wouldn't push on the card.
Yeah. USB 3 guy in chat asked if the add-in card was giving me the throughput that I was looking for. I have not tested it since I got the Drobo up and working. I guess I should probably run some... I got USB 3 on this box. I had so much trouble getting the Drobo to work correctly that once I got it running, I haven't come back to it. So that's a good question. I owe a post out there on the setup, what it looks like, and some of the speeds. So, yeah, I do need to put some ATTO tests on it and run it right off the Drobo. I could do that fairly quickly. I should get that done
in a
post.
Well, and just as a...
right now.
As a highlight, too, in that picture that you have up, you can see my roll of blue tape that I used to secure my SSD with.
With the scissors.
Yeah, and the scissors. high tech.
Yeah, let's see if I can find, while you guys are chatting, I'll see if I can do a quick
test. That I've seen in the forums, have you seen those posts where these guys are talking about there's a card, a NIC card? I think it's a NIC card. Anyway, it's got video on it, remote something there, right? So it's to be able to access the server remotely, get video through the network connection, right?
There's an HP card. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. That was a popular
things
that guys were getting when they were purchasing these servers,
Yeah, I remember looking at that, and I wasn't sure what I would do with it, and it seemed kind of pricey.
That thing is real good if you don't want to use like the external video and such. For me anyway, we use it at work. We use HP's ILO interface. So, but that's that's just like I think if it's the card that I think that we're talking about here was the one that it provides the a remote turning on and turning off and access to the console, right? So
yeah,
that's good stuff there.
Yeah, and I think remotely you can access the BIOS, right? Through that card.
Yeah.
Network connection, yeah.
So yeah.
Oh, okay. See, well, I was able to turn the monitor off, and I can just remote into the server, remote desktop, so that's...
Right. This would provide you a way to get in to a separate IP address to where you can actually see that video without a monitor.
Yeah.
But I agree that that's too much for home use for me anyway. My monitor sits right here, so, Cool stuff, though.
Yeah. Okay, Jim, we got anything else, or we're going to wrap it up?
I was going to do a quick ATTO live here, because that was one of the questions in the chat. You have to give me a second.
Since we're I'm talking about that, I was going to ask, why in the world would I get better results with the slower drive? The Hitachi that came with the N40L, I thought that was a slower speed. So did the cache make that much difference? I don't know.
Yeah. It can. What's your benchmark? What benchmark are you talking about? Which?
The ATTO.
Big write, small write?
Well, it's yeah.
Or just overall.
It's just overall, yeah.
You're talking about the Seagate 250 gig drive that comes with it.
Well, I was comparing that one to the 2 terabyte. I bought the one that came with the 2 terabyte one as well.
So what's the RPMs of the two drives, 54 and 59?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was comparing it to it's a 750 gig Seagate in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a 7200 RPM. But
And it beat that. It beat the 72.
Yeah. I don't want to say double. It's not double, but it's you know, it's up there. So I was
better firmware. I mean,
I guess so. I guess just a better drive overall. But I tell you, I want one of those 3 terabyte ones because that was that's just some good numbers there.
Yeah. What were you going to show us, Jim? Something without it?
Well, I was going to try and quick find my ATTO software so I could do a quick USB 3 guy was wanting to see.
Did you find it?
To do it live. I have not.
Yeah, maybe I'll send it to you if I can find it.
Yeah,
Did you guys see, remember in the, some guys were debating whether or not they would drop some cash to get a second microserver, because remember, who was it, J.M. Wills? Yeah, he found that post for $180, right? Hey, you remember that, John?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel, $180. And then who is it? Was that you said something about my wife buy another pair of shoes or something?
No, that was me.
Yeah, that was Jake.
Yeah.
Why do you need a server? Well, why do you need another?
Why do you need another pair of shoes? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Boy.
Hey, she brought me popcorn. That's not bad, right? It was fun.
You apparently have mended the bridges or fences or whatever.
Oh, no. No, she knew I was kidding.
There you go, Jim.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, you were kidding?
Oh, of course. Well. No comment. Anyway.
But you know, with those prices getting so low, it's just incredible.
Yeah, what's going on, eh? I mean, you know, it's almost like buy the microserver and throw out the server and keep the hard drive. It's like it'll be the same price as the hard drive before you know it, you know?
Well, that's true. That's crazy.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was thinking is I had mentioned on, I think it was podcast 137 there when we did the little video of the teardown of the
167. That was 167.
167?
Okay. Yeah.
That's like the power supply. You know, I'd say if you're gonna add, more drives and let's say 4 drives in that slot where the hard drive, where the CD drive is, like, you know, maybe I don't know. What do you think about the power supply? You think this guy is like, what is it, 220, 250 watts? You think that's enough?
It has 150 watts in the.
Okay.
In the ones that we were getting, I've read where people are having problems if they try to put in 5 7200 RPM drives.
Wow.
Jim, did you get it?
Yeah, I got it. I'm saving it right now. Hold on.
I don't think there's any way you could put in 4 or 5 Velocity Raptors.
No.
You need another fan.
Yeah.
You know, you could maybe have 1 or 2 7200 RPM drives, and then the rest are going to have to be green or SSDs. I think the starting inrush current would be too high if you tried to load it all with 7200 drives.
Sure. Yeah, because that's one of the things is at least, you know, being a small form factor, there's still some elbow room for the power supply. You can actually put a longer one. As long as you keep the same form factor, you can get a longer drive in there, and it'll connect just fine.
Yeah, well, you said that you could put in your power supply from your old 495, couldn't you?
Yeah. It's the same size.
And it's the same connector?
No, the connector is different. I think the connector is different. Yeah, because the MediaSmart, they rewired their connectors differently, but it was my power supply from my shuttle computers is also that form factor. So, but again, I think that one's the 20-pin, and this one, the microserver, is the 24-pin.
So where would we go if we wanted to replace our power supply? Would I have to get it?
Yeah, I'll probably try and find a link there on Newegg and stuff, but it's, you know, it's a standard 24-pin, as long as you have you know, your 24-pin, and then you have enough, you know, SATA power or Molex power. You know, you want to make sure you have the right connectors.
That's something I wanted to ask you, John. Have you stuck a reading on there, a power reading meter on there to see what your server's drawing? Because you got 150.
Quebec.
Kilowatt. No.
Yeah.
No idea. What do you have a rough estimate of what you think you're pulling?
No, I have no idea. And I don't want to know because I got 2 of them running and another box.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a lot.
20 to 30 watts.
I don't really? Think much. How many drives you have in there?
Well, right now, I have 2 greens.
Two greens,
an SSD, and then a black drive.
All right, so that's 3 spinning drives and an SSD. So that's like 35 watts. Well, maybe up to 35 watts. So, and that's just in the drives. Now, if they're all being used, what do you think? Average, maybe 20 watts just on the drives?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think you'd be hard-pressed to be pulling more than 60 watts on one of these things. Yeah, you'd have to really load it out, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That test is running.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching that.
Pretty slow.
That's with your Drobo?
That's on the Drobo, yeah. You cross USB 3.
Wow, you're almost up to what my cheap little USB drive can do.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna do a couple tests on this just to see what. This is the Drobo itself, which, you know, this was one of the reasons I got this was because I wanted to test this configuration.
Are you still there? Oh.
Yeah.
Is that mine?
That's you.
I just got one too.
Yeah. Yeah. Get. Whoa.
I got it.
Okay.
I
good.
Clicked it.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll boot you out after, I don't know, about 5 minutes of inactivity.
Yeah.
Jay, you were talking about if the prices keep going down, you might be willing to jump on another one.
You know, honestly, for $200, man, that's hard to pass up.
Hmm. Is that available right now at that price?
Oh, no.
Or is that done?
No.
That sold out?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they sold out before the day was over.
Yeah.
At that 180.
I was just thinking about what you guys were talking about. I'm planning on pulling. I have three green drives that are in my 485, and so I was going to use that instead of this 40. That should be fine, right? I can't find the speeds of those, the actual RPMs. Those are the old EADS drives, the EADS drives.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the speed of those are.
Well, you can kind of see the Drobo's got pretty crappy speed. Now, it could be the card. It could be the Drobo. I haven't tested that on anything else, so I would need to pull that
out. The E's are probably around 100, you know, for the big sequential writes and reads, whatnot.
Probably we'll go back and test the system drive here.
You make me think about there is the on my version 1, I have my system drive, I have a 2-terabyte E's drive, so I didn't have to play around with none of that, you know, Western Digital alignment.
Right.
Anything. My other drives, they got the jumper on it. They're the ears drive, and they got the jumper. Huh. John, you went through a few hoops, say, with your system drive. You did the Western Digital thing, right?
Right, yeah. But when I did it, I had sent one of my old EADS drives that had gone bad, and they sent me the new advanced format. What is it, the EARX? It was the 6 gig, you know, the SATA 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a 64 meg buffer in it. Mm-hmm. And I put that thing in my EX-487, and that thing just really hums along. It's mm-hmm. It performs nicely. I think I posted my performance on it.
I have the EADS 1.5, so I'm going to run it right now.
Well,
how's your Media Smart Server running? You swapped in the SSD drive as your system drive, right?
I'm not running it right now, but yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's zippier. You know, the console comes up quicker. You know, I'm probably going to pull that out of there because I just kind of did it on a whim just to see if I would be wowed by it. You know, it was better. It was definitely better, but
you know,
I don't think it's probably... Yeah, I don't think it's smart to leave it in there, that's all. I'll probably take it out because I don't want to... Okay. Yeah.
Maybe you can comment in the forums there. Somebody was asking about they wanted to swap out their system drive in their, right? I'm not sure if it's a MediaSmart or it's a microserver, but they wanted to swap in their version 1 box their OS drive for SSD, and they wanted to go down the Acronis route where, make the drive smaller and all.
I did a fresh install. I don't know. Can you do the Acronis route, John? I mean, don't you need to do the whole disk signature in the registry, you know, follow the 20 steps guide to get it to work?
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of magic going on. Yeah.
Right. Even if you were to swap it with another drive of the same model, I think just because of the signature of the disk, you've got to go through these 20 steps.
Yeah, you got to know the disk IDs and stuff like that, and it becomes a bit of a mess. So this is why, your best thing to do is a clean install. And on version 1, you need a minimum size SSD drive.
Of what, 80?
Yeah, I think it's 80, and he had a 60. So it's like it's not going to work unless he created that .ini file that, you know. Yeah. And do a little bit of magic that way, but you know, don't risk it when it's your main box and then you want to just swap out the drive. It's version 1 is not forgiving.
Yeah, I got the Crucial C300 in there. So that's kind of a, it's a nice drive. It's a SATA 3. It's a little pricey for screwing around with a version 1 home server. But like I said, I was curious, so I had it, so I tried it.
It's a
second-rate Citizen after after I got my Mushkin Enhanced Chronos Deluxe. So, what's that, Jim?
Do these numbers look about right? This is a system drive. This is the ATTO for the system drive. Can you guys see that?
Yeah, those are pretty much the numbers I was getting.
Look about right.
And what kind of drive is that?
Go ahead, Ron.
That's John. The 250?
Yeah, it's the 250 that comes with it.
What, yeah. Seagate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. I have the exactly, pretty much the exact same picture. If you go to that posting in the forums on the drive comparisons,
that's mine on my 1.5 terabyte EADS drive. So it's right around 100, like I was saying.
Yeah, that's about the same. So that part is working right. I'm going to go back to the Drobo one more time. I'm pretty sure that's my F drive. Let me double check here. I'm not testing the network drive. Yeah, I'm good.
I'm going to share this one with you guys. This was a 250 gig that I had, I don't know, stashed somewhere, but it's horrible. There it is. That's just fantastic.
Oh, my God. Wow.
What?
What kind of drive is that?
It's just a little 250 gig drive. I don't know, but it's a piece of junk.
Is that SATA?
Yeah.
Did it come out of a Mac?
No.
Ouch. Right across the bow.
Wow.
Hang on.
Baby.
I'll find out what it is.
I got some more.
Must be on here.
I got more. I got more for you, Mac. Come on. Hey, Foxconn. Hey, you Chinese workers. How do you like that? Oh, you got a raise? So like 25% over $17. What are you making now? Oh, woohoo. Good times.
Can I,
nobody caught that?
No.
You saw that Foxconn thing?
Yeah, I saw it. I read the whole article. I was blown away.
Did you see Steve Jobs? Somebody asked him about it, asked him directly, you know, back in the day when he was alive. And he kind of, you know something, I got to say, I'll cut to the quick. If that had been anybody else, especially if it had been Microsoft, oh, my God, they would have had a congressional investigation on the guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But Steve Jobs, oh, you know, that's terrible. You know,
he's so creative and he's so smart.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm just so creative and so smart, and I'm going to give you some bullshit here. So, you know, maybe you could just, like, you know, just worship me some more.
Nice.
And overlook the fact that I'm exploiting, you know, a bunch of people who have to live, like, 8 to a room and don't get to see their children for, like, months at a time.
Yeah.
Because they're so grateful to be working for my freaking international life-sucking company. I'm sorry.
No, you should go ahead. You know what? You should open up.
I don't know, you know? Look, I'm just cutting it down to the... I'm just paring it down to the fine facts of what everybody's saying.
You need to do a few more push-ups, Rich.
I do. No push-ups on the weekend. Just coffee and donuts.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
That one drive that I had, this was made in 2006, and I'll post it, but it's a WJS, I'm sorry, a WDS 2500JS, whatever that means, but it's terrible. You asked me what that drive was. It's black, but whatever. It's a piece of junk. I'm going to nuke it.
Yeah,
that's a good indication that you shouldn't use it anymore.
Right.
All right. Yeah. So I ran the Drobo again. It's up there on the screen to see it. So about half the speed of the, you know, half the speed of the SATA across USB 3. I guess I need a little context on that. Is that from a speed standpoint? Certainly. Oh boy, from a speed standpoint, USB 3 compared to the SATA drive, is this all that far out of whack from where it should be? You think? Anyone? Half the speed of this spinning SATA drive that's in there right now is basically what it is.
Yeesh.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's USB.
Yeah, but USB 3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was...
Should it be... How close should it be to the...
I was expecting something a lot more.
Yeah, so was I.
Like,
what is the drive, the actual drive you got in there, though? What is the actual external drive?
That's the Drobo.
The Drobo?
Yeah.
And this is what you're getting for the Drobo?
This is the speed I'm getting off the Drobo via
UFS. That's probably what you're getting. It's probably what it is you're getting.
Yeah, I'm just wondering from a comparison standpoint, if I had a standard USB 3 drive, just a single drive that was coming off external, what kind of speed should I expect?
Really depends on what the USB, the external drive is. I mean, if you've got like a little crappy 5400 drive and a USB 3 enclosure, yeah, you'll get the max out of it. But what will that be? Not much. Not much.
Yeah.
So I'm just around 140 megs.
Well,
how fast is USB 3?
How fast is it?
Supposed to be up there.
It's faster than FireWire, which is 800, right? So whatever.
Let full disclosure here, because Mario will be on the phone to me tomorrow saying I've slandered Drobo.
That's it. About 4 gig, isn't it?
Is a Drobo plugged into a USB 3 external card or an internal card, a Buffalo card. There could be a variety of issues that's making this slow. It could be the drives that are in the Drobo, which they're fairly – I mean, I'd have to look and see what I've got in there. Let me pull that up. But could be the controller card itself. I mean, it was not a very expensive controller card. So I could have a pretty crappy controller card in there that's not getting the speeds that are promised. So just to have full disclosure.
Yeah, apples and oranges. Got to mix it and make sure.
I need to do some other, I would need to do some other testing on it.
I would suggest you don't test it, because then you're going to start thinking about how slow it is, and then the shine is going to come off the product.
Well, I didn't expect it to be as fast as the spinning drives, to be honest with you. That's not, we know a Drobo's strength isn't necessarily in its speed. I don't make too many speed apologies for it, because it's a redundant storage device, so it's meant to back up and protect, not necessarily be lightning fast.
Yeah, because it's not a dumb device. It's doing its own stuff that has to do with the protecting the data and stuff like that, as opposed to a USB drive. It's just like, give me the stuff, I copy it there, and we're done.
Yeah. No, I got you, Rich.
Yeah, I'm just picking on you.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's good. It's all good. Rich, I think officially we should maybe wrap it.
We should wrap it. So wrapped.
It's wrapped. It's all done.
Yeah, it's wrapped. So hang on a second here. So I actually wanted to talk, and you guys can, you can split if you want, or you can stick around. But I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the phone that I picked up last week, which is a Samsung Galaxy Skyrocket. So
I'm gonna bolt because I don't
go ahead.
I'm not a
and I may save this for next week.
Hey Jay, thanks.
Oh no, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. It was
thanks
fun.
For jumping on. No, very
yeah, it was good talking to you, Jay.
John, you as well. I appreciate you guys coming and talking about the servers. Yeah,
it was fun. How long did we go? How long did we chat? An hour?
Hour and a half.
Close to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Well, we started at 1. It's what, 3? It's 4?
Well, I marked it at 35 minutes, and I'm up to 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow, right. I guess it was a little bit longer than I thought. Yeah. I can't stay too much longer either.
Yeah, but we got some good material in there.
Before you go, I was wanting to. I found it and I was shared my performance screen for the drive that I have in my 487 right now.
That's nice. That's nice. Mm. And what is that drive?
That's the Western Digital 20 EARX.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that is good.
That does look like EAR speeds too.
Well, that's in a SATA 2 box. I mean, it's in a 487, and that's also after the alignment tool was used and everything. So I don't know if that's affecting the speed, but that's what I was getting. So yeah. It took me a while to figure out where I had that picture at, but anyway.
That's pretty nice.
John, I like how you added the comments to the test.
Yeah.
That's helpful because sometimes I run these things, I don't add my own comments, and then I forget what the test was.
Well, thank you.
Attention to detail.
I like it.
All right, guys.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good stuff. Thanks, James.
All right, catch you next time. Thank you for stopping in.
And away they go.
And away they go.